What we're talking about is late night and early morning low clouds. With a chance of fall, chance of showers in the afternoon, with variable high cloudiness and gusty winds. Gusty winds at times around the corner of Sunset and Alvarado. Yeah, I know, things are tough all over. When the thunderstorms start increasing over the southeast and south central portions of my apartment, I get upset. And a line of thunderstorms was developing in the early morning hours ahead of a slow-moving cold front. Cold blood. With tornado watches issued shortly before noon Sunday for the areas including the western region of my mental health and the northern portion of my ability to deal rationally with my disconcerted, precarious emotional situation. Cold out there. Colder than a ticket taker smile at the Ivor Theater on Saturday night. Flash flood watches cover the southern portion of my disposition. Yeah. There was no severe weather well into the afternoon, except for kind of a lone gust of wind in the bedroom.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to the French Connection. My name's Daryl Smith, Daryl Bradford Smith, and to be more accurate, and you are in store for a great show this Friday, coming to you direct and live from Central France. My website is IamTheWitness.com, and my contact information, IamTheWitness@Hotmail.com. You can write to me about anything that might be on your mind, or anything that you're worried about, or anything. I try to get back to everybody who writes me. It takes a little time sometimes. I do get a lot of emails. You know, today's show is going to start out with a good friend of mine and somebody I have the most, the highest level of respect for. Her name is Lieutenant Colonel and Dr. Karen Kwiatkowski. She is a wonderful resource for this broadcaster, but more than that, she's just a great resource for the country and a wonderful patriot. So I brought her on today to talk something about that's what's been happening with the confiscation of weapons and the fact that it seems like we are facing some of the most dire conditions the country has ever faced since our founding. And I think it's important that I bring somebody who I think is qualified to speak on some of these subjects in parallel with myself. It affects every human being in the planet, for that matter, and every citizen of the United States. So, and then at the bottom of the hour, I have a good friend of mine coming on, somebody that I go back 20 years with. He's a great jazz singer and a wonderful friend, and he does some of the best scat jazz on earth, if not the best. His name's Giacomo Gates. He's going to be coming on for a couple of segments. And then after the second hour, we're going to have a little bit of a discussion about fake news and how people manipulate others with disinformation. We're going to talk about some of these people who are trying to send you down the wrong rabbit hole, ladies and gentlemen. But before we lose too much time here, I'm going to bring Karen Kwiatkowski right on now. Karen, are you with me? Karen, are you with me?
Yes, I am. I'm here.
Hi, Karen.
Hi.
How are you doing today? Hello, Karen.
She should be there.
Can you,
Karen?
Yes, I'm here.
Are you breaking up for some reason, Karen?
Am I? Maybe reconnect that. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a breakup going on in your phone line there. You have a? You want a cordless?
No.
Okay. Well, let's see. Let's see if we can keep this this thing held together here. I'll be honest with you. You know, what I'm witnessing on my television set and what I'm reading about is the Second Amendment being shredded.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that this guy Padilla, without charge, is going to be kept in jail, an American citizen. No charges being brought against him. No way to get out. I'm seeing people forcibly removed from their home in spite of having the resources to remain where they live. In other words, America has essentially died, hasn't it?
Well, I mean, it sure does seem like it, and it's all coming in rapid succession. I mean, you have this court ruling. We're watching a complete federal government failure to save people, and yet immediate movement to take people's guns and to force them forcibly evict people from their homes. And, you know, some of this stuff on television, you've probably been seeing some of it. These folks have the means, as you said, to stay mm-hmm. in their homes. It's not like a dire human emergency that these people be removed. It's just that that's what the government wants to do.
Well, I see this personally as Concord Green in Massachusetts. I see this the first shots fired across the bow of the American public, and I see that there are going to be people across our land absolutely enraged, and I hope and pray emboldened by the actions of this government, and I'm hoping that this is the death knell for this criminal group that's running our nation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. I hope it is, and actually, I think it may well be. You know, George Bush told a lot of lies to a lot of people for a long time regarding some of his foreign policy plans. He told a lot of lies about you know, what he was going to do when he was president. You know, he's going to decentralize. Well, he didn't decentralize. He re-centralized. He increased federal and centralized control. And so people are actually beginning to understand that George Bush is not credible in any way. He cannot defend the country, whether this is through his grandiose foreign policy or through his inability to really react to really bad disasters like what we've got right now in the southern part of the United States. He's proven it. And I think people, you know, some people say Americans don't pay attention, that Americans don't pay attention to politics, that they don't care, that they like George Bush. It's over. That part's over. They don't like George Bush anymore. They don't like Dick Cheney. They've had it with them. These people have lost credibility to the extent that you're right. It's the death knell. And, you know, what will be the result? Will it be a peaceful electoral change, or will you see people really, you know, acting in various ways against what they perceive as a very unjust and very incompetent government?
Well, I'm wondering what your take is on it. I mean, I certainly know that New Hampshire would never end up like Louisiana. I know it wouldn't. There are too many people up there who, under no circumstances, would turn over their guns. I know people in Montana would never do that. I know people in Idaho would never do that.
Absolutely.
So what I'm saying is they chose a place. They chose a state, apparently one that they thought they could manipulate. Now, I'm wondering if it's being successful or not. I'm wondering if patriots from around the country are not going to go down there and start, you know, liquidating some of these criminal confiscators and usurpers of our constitutional values.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, but I can tell you a lot of folks are very interested in just what you're saying. They're interested in what is being done to the civil rights of people of New Orleans. And they're actually going there. Of course, they're going there in part to help people. There's a whole lot of individual people. You know, we're not hearing a huge amount. We're hearing about what the government can't do. What we're not hearing so much about is what individual citizens and small businesses and others can do to respond. And lots of folks are driving in their cars and buses, and I've seen all kinds of emails of people saying, hey, we're loading up, and we're going to go help some people out. We're leaving tomorrow. We're leaving today, you know, this kind of thing. So there are people going there to defend these people and help these people, and yeah, maybe they'll take a stand. And I'll tell you something else too. I mean, we have not seen the end of this attempted gun confiscation. It just began. Right now, they haven't had too many altercations with citizens. There's been some resistance, but it's been peaceful. I don't think that's going to stay that way.
I'm praying it doesn't. I'm not a terribly religious fellow over here, Karen, but on this particular issue, I am literally in prayer over this eventuality. I really need to hope that we can do something. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be right back with Lieutenant Colonel Karen Kwiatkowski, and my name is Daryl Bradford Smith. You're listening to The French Connection. Be right back. Yes, sir, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith, and you are listening to The French Connection. Today's broadcast is coming direct live from you on this Friday from Central France. And my guest today is the best here on many subjects, and she's one of the most prolific writers on the net today. Her name is Lieutenant Colonel Karen Kwiatkowski. She's retired. She's also received her doctorate recently, which I've been sending her accolades over the months since she did that. No small task, Karen.
Thanks.
Well, you know, some of the things that are happening, the free press is being attacked. You know, I talked to you about a friend of mine up in
yes.
Canada,
mm-hmm.
and we've got the controlled press being even more controlled, and even the cracks that have been forming have come against their wishes. I remember watching on CNN this guy, what's his name, Cooper?
Anderson Cooper. Mm-hmm.
Yes. He actually went off script, and the bottom line was, I don't see him on TV right now. I think Anderson
yeah.
Cooper's off the air.
Do you think so? Oh, my goodness. Wouldn't
is.
That be
maybe
something?
He isn't, but I haven't
not.
Seen him since he made
yeah.
those first declarations, huh?
Yeah, he got tough with the federal government, a congresswoman I think he was talking to about what was going on in Louisiana, and he was actually there, and he actually spoke truthfully and honestly about what he was seeing. He actually was a reporter for a moment. And we haven't seen that very much, but I think there's been other reporters in the same boat. So, yes, you're right, a little crack in the veneer of the mainstream media here as a result of this hurricane.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, even this gentleman, Brossard, from that parish that he was in charge of,
mm-hmm.
he was reading off a cue card as well, and he broke down right in the middle of reading it.
Mm.
And he went off message and started saying, they've ruined everything. They're cutting
yeah.
our communication. So the
yeah.
picture that's emerging is that they intentionally destroyed the rescue efforts, and so that amounts to murder because
well, it
people
does.
Died
and
as
there
a result
was,
of it.
There is apparently a numerous reports, not just from Brossard, but from others that communications, emergency communications, police communications, local communications were being interfered with or cut and stopped by the federal government. Also, one of the interesting things, you probably saw this, they put the same no pictures of caskets or anything like that. Same thing they do for the Iraq soldiers coming back in boxes. They don't want any photographs. They say, oh, for the dignity of the dead, we don't want photographs. Well, they're doing the same thing down in Louisiana. They don't want any reporting or coverage of dead bodies because, of course, what happens when Americans see fellow Americans in, you know, dead? And deceased. We get upset. We say, why did that happen? How did that happen? Who let that happen? And so, they're trying to control the media, but, less successful here with the hurricane than they have been in terms of, Iraq and Afghanistan.
Well, I'm calling this day for every American to, stand up and do what they know is right. And, you and I know that there's only so far I can go with that request. However, the request is being made, and you take it to any lengths that you think I might be taking it to in my mind here.
Yeah.
I do have limits on what I can call for here on the radio, but I'm telling you, I'm calling for that and some. We need every ounce of our patriotic spirit to rise up against what I see as the end of our constitutional republic. And we've actually haven't had this constitutional republic for some time, Karen.
Well, not for a long time, that's true.
No.
We think we do. We like to talk about it, but in fact it has not been the thing that guides how our country is run. It doesn't guide how the citizens are treated.
Well, you're right. I mean, we lost it actually back after Reconstruction when Andrew Johnson was impeached, and
yeah.
And we had the act of these presidential orders and
well,
these different.
And you know the history of New Orleans and Southern Louisiana as a whole is a history of federal government interference from day one since Reconstruction, and it is a very deep history of the federal government screwing around with that part of the country. And, you know, it's almost as if this has metastasized in this post-hurricane disaster. Not the hurricane disaster. It was disastrous enough. But the government's actions after that has been worse than the hurricane itself, has caused more deaths and is continuing to cause deaths and more destruction. This is a culmination of many, many years of federal interference, and it may be that Louisiana will emerge not as the 59th or the 49th state in every way you can think, but Louisiana may emerge as the first state to wholly and with their eyes wide open reject the federal government interference. And I hope they do. And all people who love liberty and freedom around the world should be supporting these people in shaking off the federal government. And I have to say one thing. Lou Rockwell had an article. He didn't write it. One of his writers wrote it today. But if you check out LouRockwell.com today, it's the lead article, and it says how to rebuild New Orleans. This article advocates nothing more complicated than making this entire region a tax-free and federal regulation-free zone. Basically, get the federal government out of Louisiana. And if you could do that, it would actually be rebuilt, and it would be rebuilt far better and far cheaper and far more creatively and far more quickly than anything the federal government will do. And I doubt this will happen, but I'm advocating that. And that's a step sort of in what you're saying, which is to basically the states need to shake free of the federal government
well,
and its
right.
abuses.
What we need to do, we need to convene our right to our grand jury structure that was given to us by our founders, and we need to convene these. We need to file up charges. We
yes.
need to hold tribunals. We need to identify the guilty, and then we need to try and we need to punish. And by punishment, I'm talking, this is a time of war, Karen. You know that acts against the people of the United States during a time of war
sure.
require the ultimate penalty, and that would mean that the people in charge of our government should be held accountable, liable, and then be put to death, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I
well,
mean, because they're responsible now for maybe 30,000 deaths in this region after the fact. We're talking about the 10 or 15,000 American dead in the Central Asia. And we're talking about 130 or 40,000 civilian Iraqis they've murdered.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
3,000 people on 9/11 they murdered. We're talking about OKC, Oklahoma City. Look, it's now put up or shut up from the American people. And I'm wondering, are we going to have the guts, the I don't know, the chutzpah? Are we going to be able to stand up?
Well, it's interesting. Governors like Blanco of Louisiana is asserting she's angry. She's not just angry at the federal government's poor response, at FEMA's disastrous inability to cope with this situation, but she's been blamed by the federal government. Oh well, she didn't do enough, or this kind of thing. So she's extremely angry right now at all the feds, and she's pushing back with by exercising the rights that governors do have, that state legislatures do have, to resist and corral a little bit of this federal abuse. And so she's actually doing it. And in doing that, she's setting an example for other governors. And, of course, other governors are watching what's happening in Louisiana, and they're saying, hey, we do not want this kind of abuse to come to our state.
Well, Karen, it was great to have you on for this little synopsis here of what's going on. I want to thank you very much.
Well, thank you,
you know,
for having
you
me.
You are one of my greatest guests and co-collaborators here. And thank your family for parting with you for those moments, and I appreciate you being on. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be back right after this break with lots more on The French Connection. You don't go anywhere. We've got more to come. Here we are, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Hoping that you've called my guest Giacomo Gates at his home phone number there. It seems like Scott hasn't done that. Why don't you get on that, Scott, if you want to get right away onto Giacomo's number. He's supposed to be up with me right now. But in the meantime, let me tell you a little bit about Giacomo. He's from Connecticut, a Connecticut native, and this gentleman has just been able over the years to put together some of the best scat jazz in the world. You hear some of his stuff on my bump music, but my time with Giacomo goes way back. I've known him since I was a bit of a restaurateur, jazz club owner in New York, and I gotta be honest with you, he was the best show we ever put on at this place, and to this day, he's got a special place in my heart. I remember before he was even had a couple of albums out, he was singing on stage at the place. But hopefully we're going to get him up, ladies and gentlemen, within a few moments here. If Scott, are you listening to me now? Let me talk to my engineer for a second. Scott? You got him. Beautiful. He's up with us. It's fantastic. Giacomo, are you with me?
I am.
Here you are. You know, I got to tell everybody, you know, when we started out, this is about 16 years ago now, isn't it?
I mean, I believe so. It probably had to be like 1990, yeah.
'89, '90, that's right.
Yeah.
And we were a struggling bunch over there, but it seems like everybody was at that moment. And, man, you used to bring in a piano player and your voice, and one night we had a snowstorm and you arrived. You remember that?
I do.
And you did a show with nobody else except me and my business partner, you and the piano player, and I was in heaven. And I've never forgotten that. It's one of the best music moments of my life. And I got to tell you, how's things?
Good, man. Very good.
Well, you know, your music is unique. One of the problems with people today, if they can't throw their music into a category, they don't seem to want to venture very far, do they?
Sometimes it seems that way.
Well, you know, the kind of stuff that you do, it's some of the old-fashioned 30s vocal jazz, isn't it?
It comes from that 40s kind of, you know, 40s and 50s bebop. Vocalese, but you know it's very accessible, and it's kind of what's happening today with the rappers, except this has got a melody and we don't curse.
Well, you know, because I mean you can actually hear the words that, you know, who wrote the song Scotch and Soda?
A gentleman by the name of Ken Gard.
What a song that is, man.
Yeah.
It's just you can chew on it. It's so thick, you know. I love it.
Yeah.
You know, so, and some of the other stuff, the scat music, I mean, this is from the Ella era where this was really an art form that people were, you know, really tying themselves together with. I mean, they liked this kind of music at that time in the late 30s, early 40s. Is that the era?
Well, scatting, I guess, kind of started in the late 30s, but it became popular 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Well, who's still doing it? I mean, we've got a little bit of Al Jarreau. He does try to do some scat. And,
yeah, well, oh, he certainly can.
Yeah, he can scat up a storm, but the fact is that he's not really a purist.
He comes from a real jazz thing. I mean, he's one of John Hendrix's disciples. But, you know, he just sings more rhythm and blues and kind of like pop soul. I mean, he's incorporated a whole lot of the music, but he comes from a straight ahead jazz bag. That's why he can do what he does.
Well, you know, when we do Janine and stuff, I mean, I love that song. I remember the first time I heard it, and I'm sitting there. I think I was squirting up a dessert that day or something, and boy, I'm standing there staring at you, listening to that, and you're in there with your spats on and the whole look, and I mean, you know,
those lyrics were by Oscar Brown Jr., who just left the planet just a short time ago, but he wasn't a scat singer, but he was a great lyricist and a great jazz singer. The person who originally recorded Janine was Eddie Jefferson, who was certainly a scat singer and a jazz singer and a lyricist. But the folks that are still around, I mean, John Hendrix is still around, 84, 85 years old, and he still sings and scats well. He's a real instrument. Mark Murphy, the Newer Cats, Kevin Mahogany, Kurt Elling.
Is there a little resurgence of this kind of music coming out in some of the clubs?
I think so.
Giacomo, I mean, you're still getting the gigs, and you're still doing the rounds, and I know you're still doing jazz festivals.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping, you know, in conjunction with the French Connection, we can maybe bring a little bit of awareness to this beautiful art form. I mean, I'm a jazz lover. I mean, I wouldn't set up a restaurant and try to push that kind of music if I didn't absolutely love it. And
that's the truth.
Yeah. Well, you know, even though it wasn't successful, the only thing I carried with me out of that restaurant was my love for jazz. Everything else seemed to be left there. You know.
Yeah.
In fact, I remember telling you one day, I think, I'm going to leave for France one of these days, and boy, lo and behold, I did.
You did it. Yeah.
Well, you know, we only get this isn't a dress rehearsal, and you know, you went after your dream, and it's not been an easy slog, has it? You've had some ups and downs.
Sure, absolutely.
Well, let's tell everybody what some of the albums that you got out are. I want to let everybody know some of the stuff they can actually listen to.
All right. The first CD that was released was about 1995, and it was on DMP Records.
Yeah.
And that was called Blue Skies. And, on all the records that I have been fortunate to have released, all great players. So on Blue Skies was Harold Danko on piano, Rufus Reed on bass, Akira Tana played drums, and Jerome Richardson on alto and flute. The second one that came out about 98. That was on Sharp 9 Records. That was called Fly Right, which is the original name and the alternative lyrical name for the Thelonious Monk tune Epistrophe with my lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also got a great rhythm section with David Hazeltine, Peter Washington, Ben Riley, and Jim Rotundi.
You've had five altogether? Is this your fifth one coming out now?
Will be five, yeah. The third one was Centerpiece.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Harold Danko, but with Ray Drummond, Greg Bandy, Vic Juris, Vincent Herring. And then the one that came out before that, I was featured on it. It was called Remembering Eddie Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of like a B3 quartet with James Spaulding and Randy Johnson, Eddie Landsberg, Ben Dixon, and myself. And we do most of the music that was written by Eddie Jefferson, most of the lyrics.
Well, the most recent, what kind of stuff are you selecting for this next CD?
Oh, well, it's going to be pretty much like the rest of the other albums. I mean, they're inherently thematic. There's a certain thing to it.
Giacomo, we got a break coming up. That music means we got some commercials to sell some stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back with more from French Connection, Daryl Bradford Smith. Back, Daryl Bradford Smith, French Connection. You know, you can get in touch with me, ladies and gentlemen, by going to my website, IamTheWitness.com, or contacting me at IamTheWitness@Hotmail.com, or you can go to Giacomo Gates' website called GiacomoGates.com. It's Giacomo, GIACOMOGATES.com, and his music's all available there. You know, Giacomo, I've always had a kind of a penchant for the classics and, the Bill Evans and Stan Getz and Dizzy Gillespie and whatnot, but I like the new stuff, too. I like David Sanborn, and I sure as heck like, Candy Dolfer, and I mean some of the people who've come up with some of the great traditions in their music, you know. And it's not, you know, the purest jazz is kind of going by the wayside with this electronic age, isn't it?
It's hard for me to I can't tell because I teach at a couple of colleges here in Connecticut. I teach at Wesleyan University, and I teach at the Hartford Conservatory of Music. And I'm knocked out at the amount of young kids that once they hear this music, they're really into it. And I think that's the hook. Like you were playing some great music on the break, and once you hear this music, it's not too hard to like it. I mean, I can play Count Basie for young people, and they go, "Wow, what's that?"
Yeah, well, who is that?
Yeah, how can you not like Count Basie?
I'm telling you.
So it's a question of exposure. I don't know if it's like they don't like it. It's just they don't get to hear it. So if they do, when they do hear it though, they're really intrigued by it because, you know, jazz was and it was fun music. It was party music. It was dance music. It was good time music. It was played in juke joints where people, you know, carried on and smoked and drank and danced and jumped up and down and had big fun.
Well, you know, the big fun for me today is still listening to a great song that brings back memories of, I went to NYU and,
right.
and I was, you know, I was only a stone's throw from the jazz scene in New York. And,
yes.
I hung out in SOBs and at the Vanguard and all these, and even CBGBs once in a while when they had somebody decent over there.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, the other side of it is it seems to be tough to get the right venues for certain types of music, isn't it? I mean, you know, you try to get some of this out there, and I mean, there's always the same group of people at the top here. It's hard to break into the real exposed national movement here, isn't it?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah. They want you to be big before you can get big, and if you can't get big, they want you to. It's a catch 22.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, we're going to try to at least introduce this music to my listeners, because I mean I know that if most of the people that are listening to this broadcast right now spent a little time with jazz music, they would absolutely flip over some of it. I mean, you know, it isn't the end all be all, but it certainly is one way to take a moment's flight from the pressures of the day. And
yeah.
It is. And what's your next gig coming up, Giacomo? Where are you going to be performing?
Actually, this coming weekend, the 16th and 17th, not tomorrow, the 17th and 18th,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to be at the Lake George Jazz Festival in upstate New York State,
mm-hmm.
With Richie Cole.
Yeah.
And a trio of Tony Lombardozzi, Bill McCrossin on bass, and Jesse Hameen on drums.
Okay.
And then the weekend after that, I'm doing there's a new club out in Amagansett.
Rhode Island?
In Long Island.
Long Island, okay.
I'll pass the Hamptons, way out on the east end of the island, which is going to be a new place for me, too. It's called Estia Cantina.
Hmm.
I know it sounds like it might be in Mexico, but it's really in Long Island. And I'm doing that gig with D.D. Jackson on piano, and I'm doing two nights, the 23rd and the 24th, with D.D. Jackson on piano and the legendary Earl May on bass.
Oh, that's going to be a show.
Yeah.
Jeez, you know, I'd like to fly back to see that. But, you know, I had the great fortune over here in France. I mean, the French love jazz.
Yes.
like no other society, I think.
Yes.
I happened to run into actually to Dee Dee Bridgewater, and
uh-huh.
she's been a great singer of the classics for a long time.
Yep.
And you know, with the passing of Ray, you know, Ray was kind of tied into the soul with the jazz. I mean, Ray's passing actually hit everybody pretty hard. But you know, I want to know about what your plans are to get this thing get it bigger, get it into the more people's ears there, Giacomo. You got any plans for that? I mean, what's your strategy?
Well, the next album hopefully will be produced and on another scale. I mean, what it's really all about is distribution. I mean, you can have the best album in the world, but if nobody knows if it's not promoted and distributed, you know, it doesn't get out there. I mean, whether you like Frank Sinatra or Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones, if they're going to be somewhere and nobody knows about it, then the joint is empty.
Yeah.
You know, so it's about distribution and promotion and publicity, and you know, the larger the machine, of course, the easier it is to get heard. But like you said, it's a catch 22. You know, it's when Ray Charles was alive, I mean, I'm saying this tongue in cheek, and I hope your listeners can dig it. I mean, I could have booked Ray Charles. All I have to do is answer the phone. You know? Because everybody was calling for Ray. I mean, Ray was very established. You know
something, Giacomo? I'm gonna let you go now, but I wanted to give everybody a chance just to get a. I've had a lot of emails that wanted to know who that guy was doing the scat music was, and I thought it'd be a great chance to have you come on.
I'm flattered and gassed, Darryl.
All right, man. You know what? I'll be in touch with you, Giacomo. Thanks for being with us today, huh?
Thank you for having me.
You betcha.
So long,
ladies and gentlemen. Giacomo Gates, a great, great jazz singer, good friend, and I hope everybody goes out and takes a listen to his stuff. We'll be right back. Baro play, dee, 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 d Ladies and gentlemen, Giacomo Gates. You just listened to him. There he is again. And you know, that's a little sample of what Giacomo does. And he doesn't do just that. He does ballads. He does some love songs. He does some get drunk songs. He does all kinds of stuff. And he's a real talent. You should check out his website, because if you're a music lover, I don't love just jazz. I love rock and roll, and I love country music. I love all kinds of music. I'm just a music lover. And this guy is a talent to be reckoned with. And if you watch him live, it is you stand there in awe of how cool this is. I mean, it is a cool experience, you know, especially if you're there with your best gal. It's a great time. Anyway, you know, on the next hour, we're going to do some investigating work here about some of the misinformation and some of the malarkey that might be getting spread around the net. And, you know, we've got a lot. It's difficult to figure out who is telling you what and why. And now, being a single person on this on this end of the line over here, trying to figure out all the misinformation and spin masters out there to trying to trip me up, it's a full-time job, ladies and gentlemen, because I have a responsibility not to toss crap out into the airwaves and misinform the people that I'm hoping to help. And so that becomes quite a challenge when you're faced with the types of misinformation that you can actually end up finding on the internet and sent to you in your email inbox and stuff you hear on other talk shows. So we're going to bring on one of my regular guests and probably one of the best most insightful people I know. He has a genius way of asking the right questions. His name's Eric Huffschmidt, and Eric wrote Painful Questions. And if you don't know who Eric is, you know, and you haven't seen his work, man, this is the definitive work for 9/11. After you read his book, you know absolutely, without a doubt, 100%, that the American government killed those people in those towers and brought those buildings down. It is unquestioned when you're done. And because he has that unique way of bringing the truth to the surface, he just doesn't do it with that. He does it with almost everything he looks at. I mean, you can't lie to this guy, man. He's just got the way to just, he peels through the malarkey and he just makes it evident. So I turn to him a lot for stuff, and he's a friend, and he works with me on projects, and I got to be honest with you, I couldn't be prouder to have somebody work with me. And when I asked him to help me kind of expose some of this stuff, kind of like this fake indictment stuff that came in out of Chicago, well, guess what, guys? Chicago wasn't having any of this stuff going on. This was coming in. The grand jury was meeting in Washington, D.C., and so all this stuff about Chicago and shootouts on platforms and all the rest of it was wrong. It just wasn't right. So when we come back after the break, we're going to bring on Eric Huffschmidt and talk to him about all this stuff. So stick with me. French Connection has more to come.